finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Baffert does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Mandaloon was second. Hot Rod Charlie was third. Essential Quality was fourth. 2:01:02 the final time. Bob Baffert stands alone with 7 Derby wins.
That win by Medina Spirit made his iconic trainer, Bob Baffert, the all-time leader in Kentucky Derby wins. Until all of it came crashing down after a drug test for the horse came up positive. And now everything is in question. So as the second race in the Triple Crown, the Preakness, runs tomorrow, we discover the drama in the sport of kings. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, May 14th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Matt, I know very little about horse racing, so I'm so glad you're joining me today. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me on.
Matt Hegarty has covered horse racing for more than 20 years, and he reports on the machinations of the industry for the Daily Racing Forum. So I know that the Preakness is tomorrow, Matt. I know that it's the second race in the Triple Crown. And I know that Medina Spirit, the horse that won the Kentucky Derby, tested positive in a drug test after that win. But before you walk us through exactly what happened there, how would you just describe the drama in the sport that you cover right now?
This is pretty unprecedented. We haven't had a Derby positive in horse racing since 1968. When you start talking about drugs and horse racing, it amps it up to the next level. You know, we've had drug positives that have been debated in the past. And the most important ones that have happened in the past have involved in the same trainer, Bob Baffert. This is a continuation of a pattern. And I think that's what's causing a lot of the uproar, that this wasn't a trainer who got caught up in some sort of mix up with the therapeutic medication. It's a trainer who is at the top of the game, a Hall of Fame member, a person who has won more derbies than any person in history, as long as this one stands. And he has a pattern of being sloppy in his barn operations. And it's hard to believe that you could be sloppy going into the most important race on the calendar.
So we'll dive into Baffert more fully in a second here, Matt. But I just want to explain for people who aren't all caught up what happened and when this all started to unfold, because it was May 1st, Medina Spirit wins the Kentucky Derby. How big a moment was that in terms of the outcome of that race, a moment in the sport itself?
Well, the Kentucky Derby winner is always the most talked about horse of the year. There's no equal in the sport to standing in the winner's circle at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. This was a horse who a lot of handicappers dismissed because it didn't seem like he would have the speed to carry a mile and a quarter. And he had been beaten by some of the horses already in the race. But he was a talented horse. You could see that. He did win it in a gutsy style. It was even after the race, a person like me who didn't bet the horse and didn't like his chances, you had to admire how he won the race.
He has set the all-time record for most wins by a trainer in the Kentucky Derby. He told us last week, the horse gives you everything every time. It was enough this time, and Medina Spirit has won a sensational Kentucky Derby.
And so, Matt, when did we first start hearing that something was amiss?
It was 1 week after the Derby on Saturday night. I started receiving texts from some of my sources who were saying that there was word out that there was a bad test result, that they thought it was Baffert's horse. You know, I get texts like this all the time. You know, not every time are they true. But I did reach out to Baffert's lawyer as the rumors started to circulate more broadly on Sunday morning, who had told me, I think this was around 7:30 on Sunday morning, that he would be at a press conference with Baffert at 9:30 at Churchill Downs, and that's when it was pretty much confirmed that there was a bad test out there.
Yesterday, I got a call from Jimmy Barnes. I was headed to the airport, and I got some horrible news. He said he had some horrible news for me, that he'd just been served by the Kentucky Race Commission that Medina Spirit, our Derby horse, had been tested positive for 21 picograms of betamethasone. I never thought I'd be here.
And the testing, Matt, is it a matter of course that that horse gets tested? How does that part of it work?
Yeah, so in the Kentucky Derby and a lot of the other big races, at least the top five finishers are going to be tested, and they're going to be tested with what's called a super test. The super test looks for, in the hundreds, amounts of medications or drugs that could be in a horse's system. Those samples are pulled right after the race. The horses are led into what's called a test barn, where those samples are pulled. They're then immediately shipped off to a lab. And then it takes 4 or 5 days to do the testing. And in this case, when you have a positive on the first round of screenings, then it has to go to something called a confirmation screening, which is a much more detailed test that looks at the molecule that that is in the test and makes a positive ID using some pretty sophisticated science.
What do they find?
In Medina Spirit's case, they found betamethasone, which is a corticosteroid. You inject it into a joint. You do that when the horse is has pain in one of those joints. It's basically an anti-inflammatory. And if you're familiar in human athletics with cortisone, they're not exactly the same class of drugs. Cortisone is a steroid, but it's used in kind of the same way. In Kentucky and most other states, you're prohibited from making one of those injections within 14 days of a race. In this case, you had Bob Baffert saying, well, wait a second, I've gone through all my veterinary records. This horse never received an injection. So, and we now know that he may not have been injected with the drug, but he may have gotten it from another source.
Yeah. So Baffert and his initial reaction to the test, Matt, to those test results, how would you describe that?
I would describe it as typical of most horsemen who get a bad test. And this is my job. This is my focus, this part of the sport. The vast majority of post-race positives are mistakes. They're veterinary mistakes. They're things that people did too close to race time, or they, you know, screwed up the dosage or the route of administration. In Baffert's case, he was, you can conservatively say, incredulous that the horse had tested positive.
Yesterday, I got the biggest gut punch in racing for something that I didn't do. And this is really, it's disturbing. It's an injustice to the horse.
You also have to take into account Baffert's history. He's had 4 positives for regulated medications in the past year. In all of those cases, he has claimed that they have been mistakes or accidental contamination. The problems were kind of piling up for him. And then this comes in the biggest race of the year. So you can understand him being very frustrated and being very incredulous.
So when Baffert was initially in this mode of total denial, and I heard him mention stuff like a jockey peeing in the hay, Matt, as his sort of initial attempt at a possible explanation, what went through your mind when you heard that?
Well, when he was talking about the groom peeing in the hay, he was talking about a possible explanation for a positive that hasn't been adjudicated yet. And that positive was from a race in July at Del Mar, in which the horse had tested positive for dextorphin, which is an ingredient in a lot of cough suppressants. So I don't know exactly what he was thinking when he said, oh, well, maybe my groom peed in the stall and then the horse ate that hay. That was not the most artful explanation, to say the least.
So then on Wednesday, Matt, when Baffert changes his tune and seems to have more of a formal, some might say plausible statement, what does he say then?
Well, he says that due to his own inquiry, they began treating the horse for dermatitis on his right hindquarters with a product called Automax.
Now we're following a developing story surrounding the status of Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. Heading into Saturday's Preakness Stakes, trainer Bob Baffert issued a statement earlier today saying Medina Spirit was treated with an antifungal ointment containing the steroid that caused the horse to fail a post-race drug test.
And in this case, that ointment contained betamethasone. That ointment was applied right up until the day before the Kentucky Derby. Anybody can look up Automax on the internet to find veterinary supply organizations, and you can clearly see that it says betamethasone on the label. And so it's very hard to have any sympathy for Baffert's argument that, one, he didn't know that betamethasone was in the ointment, and two, that it didn't have an impact on the horse's performance. I mean, you can believe two things here. You can believe that Baffert broke the rules and that he wasn't trying to cheat. And you can also believe that the betamethasone had no impact at all on his performance, but you can still believe that the horse should be disqualified. There's a line there for a reason, and the line was certainly crossed.
So the other big question I have, Matt, is given that Bob Baffert has been on this sort of a hot seat, given that he's under a spotlight, given that he is the biggest name in the sport that you know so well, why isn't he allegedly being more careful here? It seems like he has so much at stake.
That's a great question. Everyone in the industry is asking that right now. He had a positive for betamethasone in the Kentucky Oaks last year, which was held on September 4th instead of in May like it normally is. And that was for our horse, Gamin, who finished third in the race. She was eventually voted a champion. She's a fantastic horse, a great horse. Now, in that case, they said, well, wait, we did actually inject this horse. We gave her betamethasone injection 18 days before the Oaks outside of the 14-day withdrawal time. Here are the veterinary records showing that we did it. He didn't even contest the positive. He said, look, we did give this horse the injection 18 days out, and I'm just going to take my penalty, which was a fine and the disqualification, and move on from there. But you're talking about the same drug here. You're talking about the exact same substance. So a lot of people in racing are asking themselves, how in the world didn't his veterinarians go through the barn and say, we want nothing to do with this anymore? If it has betamethasone in it, then get it out of the barn. And if we do have to inject a horse, then we're going to make sure that it's even farther out than 14 days. There's no penalty for being more careful. The only penalty is for being careless.
All right, Matt, after the break, I want to get into the fallout from this positive test and what's next for the Michael Jordan of this sport and his horses.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So the various ways, Matt, that fingers can get pointed and people blamed in these situations, it all reminds me of college football, actually, because the NCAA, when they go to punish a big-time program, they use this phrase, a lack of institutional control, that feels like a parallel here to your concept of sloppy barn operations. Because in football, in college football, maybe the head coach didn't know about something that had gone wrong, or maybe they did, but either way, it would be their responsibility. They are the bottom line on that. Is that the same dynamic with Bob Baffert and his horse training operation?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great analogy that I have not actually, come upon myself, the lack of institutional control. But that is what appears to be the problem in Baffert's barn. If a trainer gets multiple violations within, 365 days, then the penalties start increasing. So he's facing that right now. He had the positive for betamethasone in Kentucky last year. He had the two positives in Arkansas out of races in early May last year. So it will be interesting to see what happens in the adjudication of this one, to see how many penalties are going to apply to this one as well, for what penalty he's going to have to take. He's already said he's going to fight this. He's going to appeal it. He's going to say that the amount had no impact on the horse's performance, all of which is probably true. But the problem is there's still a rule. He will have to face harsher penalties if he doesn't get off on this case than he would if this was the only penalty he had in the last year.
So the penalties, the repercussions, as we understand them right now, Matt, what are they? What is Baffert? What is Medina Spirit facing in terms of those punishments?
Well, the rules call for an automatic DQ. So that would mean he's not the Derby winner anymore. His owner and his connections don't get the $1.8 million purse. He'll be placed last in that race, and he won't be known as a Derby winner. Baffert, at the very least, would be facing a $1,500 fine and a 15-day suspension. For a guy like Baffert, who runs a lot of horses, that's a two-week plus one-day vacation for his entire barn. He's a very wealthy guy. He's had a lot of success in the past. You know, he could absolutely weather that. But the problem is the damage to his reputation, the pressure that that organizations in racing are putting on owners to pull horses from him. You've already had two outfits pull horses from him. I don't think he's doing himself any favors by trying to fight this. You can't acknowledge that you made a mistake and then say that you shouldn't face any repercussions for it. This is a guy who was very well liked in the racing industry until all of these positives started coming up, and he is now rubbing people the wrong way, and he's rubbing a lot of people the wrong way.
I was pretty surprised by what Churchill did today. That was quite like, you know, no due process or whatever. Do we still live in America? So, you know,
I think he needs to take a step back and think about what's best for his long-term future.
Matt, I just want people to understand the 101 of Bob Baffert here, in case they've never seen the man, in case they only vaguely are aware of how big a deal he is. Where does he sit in the ecosystem of horse racing?
Well, Bob has a really great background. He grew up in a small town on the Mexican border called Nogales in Arizona, which is also where I'm from. And he started out in quarter horses, had some success in quarter horses, eventually, you know, got started out in California, was known as a guy that could get a lot out of his horses, even cheap horses. And then, you know, about 25 years ago, he started having good enough horses that it could show up in the big stakes, and they were running very well as well. So he started getting better clients. He started getting better horses. Given his success in the classics, which are the Triple Crown races, you have to put him in the top 10 trainers of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame. I believe he was elected into the Hall of Fame on his first year of eligibility. The amount of purses he's won, the amount of races he's won, the number of Triple Crown races he's won, put him up there in a class of the best trainers of all time. And he's done it in a way that a lot of trainers haven't been able to do. He has trained the last two Triple Crown winners. He's been able to get a horse through this 5-week grind, and he's been able to do it twice to win those races. And considering how rare it is to be able to do that with a horse, any person who does it twice has to be considered one of the all-time greats.
So we are looking ahead now, tomorrow, Matt, to the Preakness. And Medina Spirit is going to be running, and a second Baffert horse, Concert Tour, will be running as well.
Preakness organizers will allow Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit to enter the second leg of the Triple Crown. This following an agreement reached between Bob Baffert and the Maryland Jockey Club that will submit his horses to pre-race testing and monitoring.
What is it going to be like, and where is Bob Baffert going to be in all of that?
Yeah, Bob Baffert is going to be in California at home. He doesn't want to be, as he called it, a distraction. I can remember being at Belmont Park in 2003 when Funnyside was going for his Triple Crown. I don't know if you remember that horse. Funnyside was a New York bred. He was owned by a bunch of normal guys that that lived up in upstate New York. He won the Derby as a long shot, but he won the Preakness like a good horse. And so 3 weeks later, he came to Belmont and looked like a winner. And Empire Maker went by him and won the Belmont. It was the very first time I had ever been at a racetrack in which I heard the people boo the winner. I think if Medina Spirit wins the Preakness tomorrow, you're probably going to see the second time that I've seen a horse get booed after winning a race. That's how bad the feelings are in the racing industry right now.
Matt Hegarty, thank you so much for demystifying and explaining a story that's more fascinating than I even realized.
Well, thanks for having me on, Pablo. It was a pleasure.
Up next, Wright Thompson joins us to reflect on his one-on-one time with Bob Baffert.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
For his podcast series on horse racing titled Bloodlines, Wright Thompson had investigated the run of horse deaths plaguing the sport, and he spent time individually with Bob Baffert at his barn in Santa Anita, California. So we called up Wright to ask him for his insights on this major protagonist of this drama and how he's processing the headlines this week.
Well, I mean, my first reaction was, since I won a bunch of money on that horse, to make sure that I didn't have to give the money back. Once the stewards or whatever their judges confirm the race on the track, that's who gets paid. Whatever happens later does not affect the payouts. And then after that was, I mean, curiosity, like everyone else. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about this is that horse racing, which is, you know, has been a dying sport for a very, very long time, essentially has sort of two relevant things. That is the Kentucky Derby and Bob Baffert. Mm. And in the immediate aftermath of this positive test, to see these two pillars of the sport turn on each other, I thought was very interesting.
So when you first met Bob Baffert at his barn, right, what kind of an impression did he make?
I would describe him as what you imagine a sort of aristocratic horse trainer would look like, with his really expensive custom ostrich skin boots from Lucchese and a blue blazer and some really fancy sunglasses made by a company that, like, normal people like me have never heard of, with Leica binoculars and a really fancy stopwatch.
And the hair, man.
The white hair is strong. And, you know, a lot of people don't know, he grew up on a border town ranch. And so a lot of people in this industry are sort of born into it, and he wasn't. One of the central things I came away thinking about Bob Baffert, and I think this is instructive in this moment, is he has never forgotten the distance between where he started and where he is. And so I don't think he thinks he's made it. And that is interesting to think about in the context of all of this, about, you know, if this turns out to be true, why would someone who has so much risk it all for seemingly so little?
How does he go from this border town ranch guy to this racing aristocrat atop the sport of kings, the public face of a sport full of, like, actual aristocrats?
It's interesting. I mean, a lot of horse trainers, I mean, this isn't surprising, but they're not people. Like, they're a lot more comfortable around the animals. Baffert is the rare guy who is charismatic, who can deal with the horses, but also deal with the owners. I mean, the Venn diagram of people who can manage needy billionaires and needy thoroughbred horses is very, very small. Mm. And so he rose to the top of this profession because he can do both. And part of what the clients are paying for is the Bob Baffert experience.
From your time around Baffert, right, something that I'm curious about is just how much hands-on time he spends with any given horse. And obviously in Medina Spirit's case, this is a Derby-winning horse. But what's your sense of what Baffert is actually involved with on the micro?
I mean, I think he's the CEO. I mean, I think he's Nick Saban. He goes in the recruit's house to get him, and then he, you know, talks to the team before games. But in terms of actual instruction, it's the position coach. I mean, I think that's a useful analog. Mm. I don't know what's more damaging to Bob, that there was a positive drug test or that he might not have touched this horse at all. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know the answer to that. Like, I don't know what's more damaging to his business, that either he did this or that he didn't and didn't know. You know, I'm not sure which is worse for him, frankly. But this is an enormous operation. I mean, the correct way to look at Bob Baffert is as CEO.
Well, the idea, right, that horse racing is at this particular moment an inflection point, maybe, where there is this microscope being applied to a sport which will show all sorts of things that people find disturbing. How would you summarize where horse racing is right now in terms of all of this happening at this particular moment?
I mean, horse racing was born in and for an America that frankly doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, one of the things we talked about with the Bloodlines podcast, and then when you and I talked after it came out, was that horse racing is for people who see animals as livestock. And more we are a country where people see animals as pets. So all of these attempts to treat the horses as if they are Olympic sprinters is, I feel, one of those things where you have two groups of people looking at the same animals in two very different ways.
And those discrepancies, right? The notion that the world of horse racing was feeling misunderstood and then now further maligned by this drug test and all of this soap opera coming out of the Kentucky Derby, it all led to Baffert invoking cancel culture as his personal situation is concerned.
We live in a different world now. This America is different. And it was like a cancel culture kind of a thing. So they're reviewing it.
So leaving aside the political usage of that term and how this doesn't really make sense on that level at all, right? His entire sport is seemingly feeling pretty desperate, feeling threatened, feeling like they might get canceled in a sense. Did he mean this more specifically? What was your understanding of it?
I mean, what I think he was referring to was the speed with which Churchill Downs, an organization that Bob Baffert has made lots of money over the years, how quick they were to sort of turn on him. The move in PR now is just to end the news cycle and to distance yourself. And I think he was probably surprised at the speed at which people he has made a lot of money ran from him. I think that's probably what he meant. But when he invoked cancel culture, I mean, that's one of those phrases that, like, has almost been totally stripped of meaning.
Yes.
Because it is now political football.
Well, it felt right. Like, now he was on the outside of this world that he was once squarely the sun of, the center of that solar system, now, like, looking in, shut out. And as much as there is that political implication, my takeaway was like, oh, this is a guy who is feeling kind of desperate in a way that I didn't really ever think of him as such.
Well, it's interesting when you put it that way. He still is the kid who grew up on the border town ranch. And just because he works for people with hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars doesn't mean that they see him as an equal or that he even feels that way. And even if you've won seven Kentucky Derbies, the billionaires who run horse racing will cut you loose in a second if it means, to quote the West Wing, picking up a knot of boat speed. And so it must have been interesting for Bob Baffert to realize that this is the sport of kings and you're not the king.
Well, it reminds me, right, the last time we talked, you had this interview with Bob Baffert where he was feeling quite existential at that point. What do you remember about what he told you and how that moment connects to what we're discussing today?
In the wake of all of the horse deaths around the country, but particularly at Santa Anita, Bob was quoted in a lot of those stories because he's the only person that, you know, mainstream people have ever heard of. And it occurred to him that not only his life's work, but the business to which he had devoted his life could be going away.
Now, everywhere I go and, you know, like restaurants or whatever, run into people, they go, Bob, what the hell's going on out there? It just came in like a, it's like this cloud was over us. You know, I think this is the first time that this could all go away.
His biggest concern for years was just win the next big race. And I left his barn feeling like there was someone contemplating the end of an entire world who was really thinking about what could be lost and how quickly it could be lost. And I think some of what Bob probably feels is an entire career that he is now at the end of, suddenly feeling like the narrative of it is up for grabs. The way you were viewed is the sum of all of this. And so for that to suddenly have gone from carved in stone and marble to feeling like it's up for grabs must be terrifying and sort of world-shaking.
The world that Bob Baffert occupies, the world that he helped shape, obviously, right? He's not going to be there at the Preakness this weekend. Even though his two horses have now been cleared to compete, he will be on the outside quite literally. What is next for him? What do you think that guy does as all of this proceeds?
I think he goes to the barn at sunrise. I mean, I think it's what he's done his whole life that has to feel like the place where he is most in control. And I imagine that in times when you feel spun out of control, refinding that is probably the most important thing in the world.
Wright Thompson, thank you for telling us about a guy that we're still trying to understand.
It's my pleasure. I always enjoy talking to you.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Sarah Cazzotti, Eric Neal, Heather Lombardo, and Jackson Udgelow. I'll talk to you Monday.